It's Friday!
Okay! Tokyo!
South America!
Australia!
France!
Germany!
UK!
Africa!
Here we go! Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. I hate it when the sneezes hit me right as the drum loop starts. That's what happened. It's almost 2 minutes past the hour, and thus we begin this live broadcast on the horn for the 26th day of January, 2018. This is the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live till we get that fixed, or once we get that fixed. And, of course, headon.live is also where we live. And, WhiteRoseSociety.org has the stream, as does headon.live. And I'm operating under the assumption that everything is working. I certainly hope it is. So, let me do the "Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid" part. And that'll get us off and running for Friday on the front porch. I have very happy news to report, as I mentioned last night. We're done with fundraising, so every broadcast between now and the end of January, which comes on Wednesday, is fundraising free. And every month, the sooner we wipe out fundraising, the more fundraising free broadcasting we have. So yay, the only thing we have to do every night between now and then is simply provide thanks. And thanks go out this 26th day of the month to Milton in California, and to Michael in Madison, and to Karen in Colorado. Thank you. And thanks also go out to our buddy Dr. John, formerly of New York, and now of the far west. So thank you to all of you. You are a big part of why this keeps going. And let me try. And thank you very kindly for a brand new subscriber, Peter. Thank you, Peter. Thank you very, very kindly for jumping in and becoming a subscriber. That having been said, that's the end of fundraising. Not another word about it. Just thank yous. And so I can tell you that we had a lovely day here in Appalachia. Blue skies, almost 60 degrees. No propane burning in the studio. Yay. And a toasty 65 in here. Yeah, I'm going with a little fleece just to keep the heat in, and my worn out Uggies to hopefully keep warmth around my feetses, because when they get cold they hurts us. Yes. So as we move toward the halfway point of winter, it's important to keep in mind the things that your body needs to keep good health throughout the remainder of the cold weather months, or the hot weather months if you're listening from up over down under or somewhere below the equator. Yeah, a toasty 54 degrees in the man cave. Well, that sounds pretty nice, Sparky. By the way, if you go over to headon.live and click on the chat room link, you will be immediately transported to the Horn chat room, where you'll be greeted by the likes of Anatole and Squeaky and VT Blom, and of course, longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space two ways to become both man cave and Sparky this evening. Yes, he's just show. Sometimes he just shows off like that. But we've got a. And hey, that's good news. That is good news indeed. Ralph's reminds me that since fundraising did get met this month, that means the Trash Wisconsin Challenge got met, and it goes up each month. So that's an extra $25 boost. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you very, very kindly. No, my fleece is not as white as Punky asks, or Scott. Well, Scott and Punky and Chirps the Cat. Is your fleece as white as attendees at a Trump rally? No, actually, it's blue. I've got that whole black and very, very dark blue jeans going on, and a lighter blue fleece, and I've got the sort of overall look of a bruise, like maybe what Dirty Donnie's eye is going to look like when he gets home and melanoma. Sort of whacks him one with her purse or some such. Reports from the Daily Mail of the UK, thanks to Isaac for letting me know. Out of the Daily Mail out of the UK reporting that melanoma has taken up residence in what they describe as a posh DC hotel. Now, I don't know quite what that means. There's a lot of nice hotels in DC. There's the Mayflower. There's the Hayes Adams. Is that the Mayflower too? I don't know, but lots of nice hotels. I've even stayed in a couple of them. But anyway, she is said to be something less than happy about everything. Yes, understandably so. But anyway, you want to keep up your strength as the as winter moves toward the halfway point and into the downhill side to winter, moving toward the vernal equinox and St. Patrick's Day and all of that. And that's why I was very pleased when the hardworking peripatetic periodontic scientists of Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs reminded me that this evening supplement for a low 3-month supply price of $199.99, because they work really hard to dig this stuff up. Yes, that's right. Absolutely. You need this. It's a great blood detox and a liver cleanse and a kidney flusher, and it'll apparently cover up urine screens for weed and stuff like that. I'm talking about Gargantuan Golden Seal from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Yes, Gargantuan Golden Seal, now with Omicron Mu Gamma flavonoid molecules, recently discovered by our hardworking scientists. The Omicron Mu Gamma flavonoid molecules add an extra punch to your nutritional balance each and every day. Yes, Gargantuan Golden Seal, only from Horn Labs, at Horn Labs on Twitter, Horn Nutraceuticals. It's vegan, it's gluten-free, it's free-range, cage-free, cruelty-free, and also free of any actual content, because, of course, it's just another bullshit nutritional supplement, and this one has the advantage of being imaginary. Yes, because the entire radio world is financed on the backs of simpletons who buy nutritional supplements from people on the radio. Paleo chocolate chicken bone beverage and whatnot. Well, from us, you get a bullshit nutritional supplement, just like all the others. We just tell you up front. But if you do, if you are simple enough to spring for the $199.95 price for a 3-month supply of gargantuan golden seal, now with Omicron Mu Gamma flavonoid molecules, well, we'll send you a little bundle of test strips, the same kind we don't use here. And you can use it to find out what, in the privacy of your own home, what we already know here. That gargantuan golden seal, now with Omicron Mu Gamma flavonoid molecules, has absolutely no nutritional value whatsoever, and is, in fact, pure and utter imaginary bullshit. Yes. No, Silent R. Lamar, it's not the same as bourbon. Because bourbon is real, and gargantuan golden seal with Omicron Mu Gamma flavonoid molecules is not. You know, I've never cared much for golden seal, but thanks to the hardworking peripatetic periodontic scientists at Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter, I can get all the gargantuan golden seal I want and never have to worry about the after effects or the aftertaste or the burps or the farts or anything that go with all those other bullshit nutritional supplements. Yes. So hurry. Supplies are limited. In fact, they're imaginary. And don't call now. Operators aren't standing by. Use no hooks. Post no bills. This side up. FOB. COD. PEEINACUP. With gargantuan golden seal. Now with Omicron Mu Gamma flavonoid molecules. Only. From Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs. On Twitter. Yes. Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. By the way, of course, we've got these things we do now at the beginning of the program, and I enjoy them. I get a heck of a kick out of them because, well, it's sort of fun poking the soft and tender spot of hucksters and hustlers and, you know, people who prey upon the weak-minded who buy nutritional vitamin supplements from people on the radio. We don't do that here. Yep. No Swedish mattresses either. But what we do have is This Day in Horn History. Yes, for today's edition of This Day in Horn History, we're dialing the Horn 9000 time machine 7 years into the past, all the way back to January the 26th, 2011. It's Prayer Meeting Wednesday in 2011, and Bob starts the lesson with a story about Master of Sacred Theology and President of the Southern Baptist Convention, Richard Land, affectionately referred to as Reverend Pastor Dick Land by Bob, and still referred to as such to this day, even though he is an emeritus Dick Land by now, I think. Reverend Dick Land has been warned by his knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, evangelical congregation that he needs to pull out of the interfaith religious diversity group Abrahamic Initiative for fear that it'll appear Pastor Dick Land's organization is in favor of tolerating the fast Islamists, a term Bob concocts as he's reading through the article. And pull out he did, brethren and sistren, pull out he did, like a real upstanding Christian man of God, Brother Bob then proclaims. First musical interlude is appropriately called The Ecumenical Movement by Robin and Crystal Bernard, which thoroughly ridicules any interfaith tolerance. I still have that recording. Yes. Next up is Buster Wilson, no, really, from the American Family Association, who's mocking the guy from the first story. Buster says, I disagree that the radical jihadists are a recent small percentage of the Muslim religion. Really? I feel that nonviolent, peaceful Muslims are the small minority of that religion's population. Just my opinion. But the truth is, the fact is, that every single suicide bomber rocket launched into Israel bus stop, blown up, plane downed, has done so in the name of Islam and the Koran. Somehow help me understand where I'm wrong about that. To which Bob eloquently responds as follows. Brother Buster, I'm here to do exactly that because I remember a plane downed into an IRS building in Texas last year, and the suicide bomber on the plane was a right-wing libertarian behind the stick, Glory. Yes, I seem to recall a backpack IED that was disarmed and defused before it could have slaughtered untold numbers of people in Spokane, Washington, and they found a T-shirt in it where the perp was tanning in a Relay for Life. Glory. The second bumper comes courtesy of the Horns House Band, the Drive-By Truckers, aptly titled Too Much Sex, Too Little Jesus. Still got that recording, too, and it comes in mighty handy. During the second hour, Bob does an expose on the government's treatment of Bradley Manning and how keeping him in solitary confinement for an indeterminate period of time without bringing any charges is, in fact, indicative of an underlying system-wide problem in how the United States treats its prisoners, foreign and domestic. Bob also makes reference to Jane Hampshire and Glenn Greenwald's Bradley Manning Advocacy Fund, which is supposedly put together to defend Bradley Manning. Bob calls the fund a tool for furthering Glenn Greenwald and Jane Hampshire's own personal agenda and not anything intended to hire defense lawyers for Bradley Manning. It's a slush fund for Glenn Greenwald, says Bob, having been endowed with the luxury of hindsight as I type this and having observed the last few years how Greenwald has used his platform to the detriment of the United States at every turn. I would argue that Bob's 2011 proclamation about Greenwald's little slush fund was more truth than speculation. And that's a look back into the ghost of Horn Past, 7 years into antiquity for This Day in Horn History. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that well. The grifting is... The grifting is strong. Strong indeed. Not sure what you mean there, hung like Jesus. Hey, you need a news bank when you need when you read This Day in Horn History. Well, okay. Scott and Punky pointing out, I miss those long ago days. Time was leaders of the GOP spoke out against America, taking its cue on how to live life based on choices made by a TV character. All that went away with Trump, a character on a phony reality show whose example in life choices is beyond dismal. Good thing Murphy Brown's coming back! Yes. Meanwhile, note coming in from Jeff in Hellhole, Indiana. Ah, Dickland, pull out. LOL. What a wonderful place the country would be if the fathers of every one of these white-wing assholes had just pulled out. Billy Graham didn't. Oh, no. Neither did... Billy Graham didn't. Oral Roberts didn't. You get the idea, right? So, 18 minutes past the hour. We've got some catching up to do. A little bit of catching up. It is, by the way, Friday on the front porch, and here in about 42 minutes or so, we'll fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, and it all happens over on the Skype. And in point of fact, if you would like to, and you've never participated in Friday on the front porch before, you are heartily encouraged and invited to participate. It's usually a rousing good conversation. Just send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunk, Sparky Dunk, one word, and Sparky will show you the breadcrumb trail and point you toward the, or direct you, your attention to the appropriate quadrant of the sky whereat he will shine the Bob signal here in a very little while. And then, lo and behold, you'll be involved in the conversation, and it is a rousing, free-form, no-holds-barred, bring-anything-to-the-table-you-pretty-much-want-to kind of affair. Yep. So that's how that works. And, you know, one of these days we'll bring more telephony back into it, but there's going to be some money involved in that. Okay, a good bit of money. Like a new Comrex. Anyhow, so that's going to happen in short order, and I hope we'll have a Jim Dandy conversation this evening. But like I said, we've got some catching up to do. You might recall that the other night I made mention of good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, Christian House of Representing Republican member Pat Meehan of Pennsylvania stan. Pennsylvania gets a stan now after what they did to the country back in 2016. He was reported to have, well, I mean, you heard it here. He blamed Obamacare for the fact that he sexually harassed a young woman who was a member of his staff. Well, the copy from the folks over at Crooks and Liars, written by Scarce, notes, after a week-long struggle, the Republican congressman has been forced, strike through, decided to retire and will not seek re-election after it was found that he'd settled a harassment case against a former staffer with taxpayer money, decades younger than the very married congressman. Meehan later referred to the young woman as his soulmate, a claim which was roundly jeered and seemed to finally force the Republican's hand. That news broke yesterday. It was sort of buried by the fact that, by the news that that the nectarine Nero had been chomping at the bit to fire Bob Mueller from June onward, and that only his nearest and closest counsel, White House lawyer Don McGahn and the lot, threatening to walk and just letting him flap in the breeze, kept him from doing so. That sort of overshadowed things yesterday, last night. The decision, the Philadelphia Inquirer notes, makes me and the latest in a string of powerful men, including other members of Congress, to lose their positions amid a national backlash against sexual harassment. Comes 5 days after the accusation and his secret settlement payout were first made public, and 2 days after interviews in which the congressman seemed to worsen the situation by attempting to defend his actions, I'll add, by blaming Obamacare for making him sexually harass a member of his staff. Then came the statement. After consultation with my wife, Carolyn, you know, did you really have to put her name out there in public? Hasn't she suffered enough, Congressman? And with my 3 sons, and after prayerful reflection. Prayerful reflection. You know, if I retire now, I get my full retirement, my pension, the best health care in the world. Maybe my wife doesn't divorce me and take half of everything I have all the way down to my toenails. And somewhere along the way, I don't get indicted. So I'll quit now. That's your prayerful reflection. Dear Jesus, please don't let him indict me. Please, Jesus.
Jesus!
I write to inform you that I will not seek re-election to the United States Congress for the 7th Congressional District in 2018. He wrote that letter to his campaign chairman. Today, I communicated the same to the office of Speaker Paul Ryan. You know, many more of these Republicans go the way of all fleshiness. Paul Ryan's going to wind up like the Gene Hackman character in Young Frankenstein, standing in the woods yelling, "Come back! I was going to make espresso." But, you know, it's always good to have a little bit of follow-up. And this, too, the other night on, I think it was prayer meeting Wednesday, I was going to play Gavin McInnes's nasty-ass racist Sambo audio. And I had queued it up earlier and had it ready to roll. And then when I clicked play, it was... You know, like, you know, when a YouTube video has disappeared, it just looks like static on an old TV screen. Well, it turns out there was a reason for that. Yeah. CRTV, which is the gang that airs the Proud Boys, of which Gavin McInnes is the leader. They pulled the video and then edited out the moment at which Gavin McInnes refers to Senator Cory Booker as Sambo, who is, and this is a quote, shucking and jiving for the white man. Somehow I'm looking at a photo of Gavin McInnes and I'm thinking he doesn't look anything at all like Huey Newton. Mm-mm, no. Right Wing Watch grabbed the clips, and then YouTube turned around and informed Right Wing Watch that CRTV had flagged three clips that they posted of his remarks, including the Sambo comment, as copyright violations. This is what right-wingers who get caught saying nasty shit do when our friends at Right Wing Watch post them for everyone in the world to see. And then eventually Right Wing Watch wins because, of course, it's journalism and it's fair use, and it's not a copyright violation. But YouTube defaults to agreeing with anybody who files a copyright violation, so that the person asserting their First Amendment rights then has to jump through a bunch of a prodigious load of bullshit hoops. And so even though CRTV filed the bullshit copyright claim and tried to edit away their racist remarks, Right Wing Watch kept a copy. So they've still got video and audio of Gavin McInnes referring to a United States senator from the state of New Jersey and a man of color, who, of course, is far from sufficiently ideologically pure, I understand that, but still referring to him as Sambo, shucking and jiving for the white man. Yeah, I know. Other things to catch up with. This isn't so much a catching up thing. This is just a lovely little moment with White Power Barbie. I don't think it's, tell me if it's, is it wrong for me to refer to permanently aggrieved, painfully ignorant human being Tommy Lauren as White Power Barbie? Aryan Barbie? Prussian Blue Barbie? Is that okay? Because if it's not, you know, let me know. We've got a whole lot of really, really passionate, feminist, intelligent female members of the Horn Family Community Congregation, a lot of male allies, and if it's not okay for me to refer to Tommy Lauren as White Power Barbie, I won't. I'll have to find some other way to point out what a godforsaken idiot she is. But being as how she's a Nazi sympathizer, it's kind of hard to resist the White Power Barbie appellation. I'm not the only one, and I didn't come up with that. White Power Barbie, until I'm told otherwise, I'll go ahead with that. Aryan Barbie. Compassion is hard. Right. You might recall she got her big break by working for the Beckerhead over at his rapidly failing broadcast enterprise. And got herself canned for saying that even though she was an area, you know, I may be a right-wing conservative Aryan neo-Nazi, but I believe in a woman's right to choose. Gone. And she was immediately hired before Well, thank you. Thank you, Michael in Madison. Subject line, progressive Clippy. Damn, I was just about to send Clippy to your inbox to remind you that that Cory Booker is ideologically impure, but you beat me to it. You're faster than the software, Bob! Oh, well, that and the 15 or 20 seconds of internet latency, Michael. Right. But, so there's this thing, and you know, I've been reading about it 2, 3 weeks, a month, whatever, and I've sort of sat back and said, no, this cannot fucking be real. It popped onto the radar maybe 3 weeks ago or so. It all runs together after a while. That there was this thing and that there are kids in the United States of America who were doing the Tide Pod Challenge. And anybody who does laundry knows that now we have these little tiny dissolvable plastic packets of detergent that you just bloop, throw in the washing machine, and the packet dissolves, and the detergent does its detergent thing, and the blue part mixes with the orange part, and everything comes out smelling springtime fresh and clean. But that there are kids in America who are swallowing it as part of the Tide Pod Challenge, in which they challenge members of their peer group, "Here, kids, get off my lawn!" To do it, and some have, and they wind up very ill, if not dead, and you know, because poison. Poison. I mean, just because you can buy it doesn't mean it's not poison. I mean, this isn't like some fraternity pledge, some 18-year-old fraternity pledge, sitting in the fraternity house with all the older brothers pointing their elbows at him, going, "Drink, drink, 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 drink," and the kid gets alcohol poisoning, which is horrifying enough and happens far too often all over the country. This is kids willingly and willfully swallowing poison. And so it gained a sort of cultural heft that frankly astonishes me. Well, it apparently astonishes White Power Barbie, too. Oh, yes. And you know whose fault it was? Well, no, not Hitler's.
Not only is it insanely dumb, it's downright pathetic. This isn't a social media problem, a Tide problem, or even a medical problem. It's a parenting problem, like many things wrong with modern society. And I know what you're thinking. The Tide Pod Challenge couldn't possibly be political, could it?
No, that wasn't actually what I was thinking. What I was thinking is, what the f*** do you know about parenting Tommy Lauren? That's what I was thinking, because, well, I guess I'm just cranky that way, but... I was also thinking that her delivery sounds like she's reading it off of a teleprompter, and well, stilted and sort of, but no, I honestly wasn't thinking it was a political problem. By the way, Robert in Australia pointing out the Darwin Awards, and this year's first place goes to the Tide Pod Challenge. Is the Tide... The question I was asking myself about Tide Pods, I didn't bring it to the program or anything, because the pod thing, it's not just Tide, but Tide is, you know, it's pretty, it's the orange and blue. Orange and blue goes really well together. Just looks pretty. I was asking, you know, is this, where do these pods fit on the ecological spectrum? I like to get, I mean, yes, if I was just more ecologically pure, Agnes and I would take our laundry out to a nearby stream that wasn't contaminated by acid mine drainage, and we would simply soak the clothing and beat them with sticks as they laid on a rock or something, I guess. But no, we use laundry detergent and we use washing machines and we try not to, we try to be, you know, economical and not frivolous in the way we go about doing that. But I usually opt for the detergent that has no dyes and no perfumes and isn't particularly vile or hateful or nasty for the... At least I'm making the effort. But Arian Barbie here says that somehow or another people aren't parenting appropriate. Look! Is it just the pod thing? Because I don't remember back when parenting was good and white, and I was a wee little tyke. I don't remember having to be told, honey, baby, don't eat mommy's detergent, please. Don't drink the bleach. And somewhere along the way, there was a basic lesson about poison and not consuming it. And the skull and crossbones was there. Poison. And a few years later on in life, and after I was past the possibility of licking my finger and sticking it in a light socket or sprinkling goddamn detergent on popcorn or anything like that, Mr. Yucky came along. I guess because children were associating deadly poisons with being a pirate. I don't know. But Mr. Yucky came along, and he was a smiley face going, bleh. And we still didn't... it's a political... Liberals are making children eat Tide Pods because we don't have prayer in school. Is that where this is going?
Actually, yes, it is. It's just the latest symptom of a larger problem, the breakdown of the American family. It's what happens when kids aren't taught boundaries, respect, consequences, or logic. Parents nowadays are taught to live and let live. Just go with the flow. Let your teens express themselves. But this modern, loosey-goosey method of parenting doesn't teach kids right from wrong or sane from insane. It produces wild animals that think they can do whatever the heck they want and get away with it.
Whatever the heck they want. Oh, she's upset. She said heck.
Parents used to wash their kids' mouths out with soap, and now kids are voluntarily eating it. Is this really where we are?
See, I don't know. I don't. It just popped into the. It popped in, and then all of a sudden, it popped up on social media, and then all over the country. Tide Pod Challenge. Oh, by the way, I've been warned. Brother Deacon Asa says I'd be careful using White Power Barbie. Mattel has already copyrighted that name for their upcoming release of dolls, co-branded with Precious Ivanka. You were great. You remind me of my daughter Ivanka. Ding 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 ding. And the hillbillies take shit for that. Don asking. Is this White Power Barbie? I happened to be listening to tonight. I saw this several weeks ago and thought it was worth keeping. It's an image, and no, I'm not going to tell you what it is. No. But yeah, we're listening right now to White Power Barbie and how liberals made children swallow washing detergent. Now, and see, you know, soaps have evolved and grown. And When I was a kid going to elementary school, I had a teacher who told us about you know, when she was a little girl, and if somebody said a bad word, that they got their mouth washed out with Octagon soap. So being a curious little kid, I came home and I said, "Mother, what is Octagon soap?" And she said, "It's laundry soap." And I said, "Well, what does it take?" This is as close to the Tide Pod Challenge, come to think of it, as I ever got. And I told her the story that the teacher had told us about when a naughty word was used, kids that got their mouth washed out with Octagon soap. And so they still made Octagon soap. I still remember the store where we bought the Octagon soap. It was the Big Star on Cloverdale Road. And and it was long, and it was a hard bar of a sort of amber-colored laundry soap that was just pungently soap. And I said, so I wanted to, you know, what's the deterrence? And mother held the bar and said, get a lick. And I went, wah, that's terrible. And spent, you know, the next 2 or 3 hours. And so that probably wasn't, but it wasn't toxic. It was just fucking soap. Laundry soap. So even I, who previously said that I didn't have, no, I guess I did the Octagon Soap Challenge when there was no Octagon Soap Challenge, but I didn't wind up, you know, having a near-death experience in the ER, because the pods are just perfect, apparently, for swallowing. And you know what? She says it's not Tide's fault, and it's not this, not that. You know, it kind of is. And Tommy's never had a cup of coffee in law school or anything, but there is something called an attractive nuisance. And that is a thing that is so, well, it's attractive. I don't mean it's pretty, but it draws people to it and then becomes a problem. You know, you might say that, a brothel is an attractive nuisance. I think that has been even argued somewhere in the jurisprudence of this once great nation. But if you make something as pretty as the Tide Pods, and you know, like Gain has them, and they're green and white, but that just looks minty fresh, right? Then there is at least the possibility of a legal theory of recovery that would say that you kind of had to expect some idiot out there would eat it, because it's just so damn pretty. It has reasonable foreseeability written all over it that somebody would wind up consuming one. Hey, by the way, I've also seen posts suggesting that Donald Trump has been told that Hillary Clinton was able to eat. Or that Barack Obama was able to eat 8 Tide Pods in the Tide Pod Challenge, and Hillary was able to eat 12. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it is kind of that. And, you know, then there's the failure to warn idea and uh-huh. But, no, it's our permissive society. And with these little children and they're twerking and their hippity hoppity music, you know what? 24-year-old young women probably shouldn't be working the Wilford Brimley corner at that tender age.
It produces wild animals that think they can do whatever the heck they want and get away with it.
Now, since she is White Power Barbie, one wonders who she means by wild animals, but you know.
Parents used to wash their kids' mouths out with soap, and now kids are voluntarily eating it. Is this really where we are? Pay attention, parents, and do better. Social media addiction is another major issue. These teens surely know it's not smart to eat detergent, but because their value and self-worth is determined by video views and Instagram likes, they do it anyway. Now, the left, which dictates popular culture, brainwashes young people into believing they live in a world where 64 gender options are up for selection.
What, Edith, huh? Suddenly the Tide Pod Challenge is tied into issues of... And there's 64 of them? LGBTQQ. That's 6. Okay. Marty asking, Hotel Tango Hotel, did this actually, this thing get this much coverage? Meanwhile, Billable Rick, noting, hi, everyone. My record in the Tide Pod Challenge is 25, only two short of Joey Chestnut's record. Hey, okay. God. I'm sorry. Sometimes you're just going to need a translator. I do my best here, Robert. Robert in Australia. The breakdown of the American family? It'd be nice if parents were paid enough that at least one could stay at home with the children at least until they were in their teens, maybe, and keep them from taking Tide Pod challenges. I added that. Wild animals? Well, what do you expect when both parents have to work three jobs and the kids are left at home watching Fox? That almost sounds like a plan. That almost sounds like this sort of thing is happening by design. Three jobs? Yes, that's uniquely American. I remember when Dim... See, I refuse to forget Dim Leader. Just because we are in the... just because we're in the clutches of the Tangerine Tiberius. Oh, I know. Those 64 choices, they've got labor man flummoxed. He said, damn, that's more choices than Baskin and Robbins. More than twice. Somebody's going to have to up their game. we now have a legal opinion. Billable Rick. Says, Bob, perilously close, again. I wanted to let you know it's perfectly fine to call Tommy Lauren White Power Barbie. Truth is an absolute defense to slander.
Everything is free. Beyonce is a god queen.
Oh, I knew it. I knew there'd have to be a red. That's why she's White Power Barbie. And now, listen, let's go back to the laundry list. See what I did there? Laundry list. Of all the things that are wrong with America.
Which dictates popular culture, brainwashes young people into believing they live in a world where 64 gender options are up for selection, everything is free, Beyonce is a god queen, and eating detergent is funny. Americans, we are better than this.
Beyonce is a god queen. Now, little Tommy... is, I would say, by the standards, the standards of beauty that are applied on a general basis within the culture, she may be said to be attractive. What's her hang up? What's her hang up with Beyonce? Anybody? Oh, wait. See Wild Animals Supra. Yes, because black. Okay, got it. Mercy sakes. Goddess. Mm-hmm. But lest anybody think that Tommy Lauren has a lock on stupid. Let's check in with Erykah Badu, since we're doing some pop culture stuff this evening. Tide Pod challenges and whatnot. Erykah Badu has gotten herself in some hot water. She gave an interview to a publication called Vulture, in which she tried to describe the positive outlook that she tries to take in life, and says, and in it she said, I see good in everybody. I saw something good in Hitler. He was a wonderful painter, but he had a terrible childhood. And she said nice things, and I guess about Bill Cosby. She said, I love Bill Cosby, and I love what he's done for the world. well, at least the part of the world that he wasn't roofying and then raping, but if he's sick, why would I be angry with him? Sick people do evil things. Hurt people hurt people. Hurt people hurt people. I'm also okay with anything I said to say about Louis Farrakhan, she said. But I'm not an anti-Semitic person. I don't even know what anti-Semitic was. I don't even know what anti-Semitic was before I was called it. I'm a humanist. Meanwhile, Jonathan Greenblatt, the CEO of the Anti-Defamation League, said, I also like to think that there is good in all people, but Hitler is pure evil. I don't care if he painted or was a vegetarian. Hitler is responsible for the deaths of 6 million Jews in a war that claimed the lives of tens of millions. Shame on you for downplaying that. Can we just not, I mean, is there not a rule or something out there? I mean, like when you become a celebrity, maybe there should be some sort of celebrity 101, like, oh, I don't know. Now listen, when you're interviewed by a celebrity publication and you're all good and fucked up, no matter how many times they try to get you to do it, don't say anything nice about Hitler. I mean, could that be a rule? I mean, is that a thing? Don't say nice things about Hitler, because there are more than enough people already in this country who are more than happy to do that, who walk around with cryptic combinations of numbers inked into their flesh, 88s and 14s and 6 and 7 8s and what the ever, and they have all got Hitler connotations to them. I wouldn't be surprised to know that Tommy Lauren had a tramp stamp that said, "We must secure the existence of our people as a future for white children." And then was followed by the other 14 words, "Because the beauty of the white Aryan woman must not perish from the earth." Would I be surprised to find out she had one of those? No. Michael in Madison wants to know, what the did Beyonce ever do to Tommy Lauren? Well, she was publicly black, and she danced around in that leotard at the Super Bowl, and made white men think sexy time things, and said that maybe the cops are unfair to people who aren't whiter than a new fallen snow. And this, of course, poor little snowflake Tommy was triggered. Meanwhile, Billable Rick wants to know, what crazy broadcast outfit is giving White Power Tommy her platform? Is it the Beckerhead? She's totally nucking futs. No, she got canned by the Beckerhead and was immediately escalated upward on the Wingnut Welfare Express to where else? Fox News. Ron in Raleigh says, whenever I see Tommy, I think of an old movie. Do you remember Pretty Poison? A pretty package full of snakes. Yeah, well, remember, what was his name? Cortland Sykes from last night, talking about women, snake-headed women. Maybe he's met Tommy. Oh, yeah, there's... meanwhile, Alma says, I think Tommy is jealous of Beyonce because Bey has a tiara. Well, then will somebody please send Tommy a tiara? makes as much sense as anything, Alma. I think, wait a minute, a tiara? Yeah, that's worth a jingle. And of course, what did I wake up to this morning? I woke up this morning to the carotene Caligula as flat and deadpan as I have ever seen him, delivering a very brief America First address. America First doesn't mean America alone. Well, it kind of does. It kind of says that it's kind of a great big middle finger to the rest of the world. But he was flatter than piss on a plate. Almost chastised. Perhaps because the news is now out that Mueller knows that he tried to fire him. And when you think, and maybe we'll talk about it, but when you think about the news that came out last night, that Tangerine Tiberius tried to fire Mueller back in June. Well, what that prompted me to ponder is the fact that in every, including his interview with Don McGahn himself, in every interview that Mueller's team has conducted, they have known that Trump tried to fire Mueller. Mueller knows Trump tried to fire him. And so if anybody has been asked, did Trump try to fire Mueller? And they say, of course not. That would never happen. Well, then all of a sudden you're in 18 U.S. Code Section 1001 territory. Material lies to the FBI. This whole bunch. This whole bunch may prove to be indictable. Angel says, I guess you can say Tommy Lauren is a sort of attractive nuisance in her own right, if you're into that sort of thing. Billable Rick asking, Cortland Sykes, is this the guy whose sister Carol Baker has endorsed for the U.S. Senate in Missouri? I wouldn't say endorsed is the word that I or maybe Carol would use, but... Yeah, something like that. Anatole warns me you're treading very close to crossing the Godwin's Law line. Godwin's Law is over. Godwin's Law went out the window somewhere around November the 8th, 2016. Hitler, 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 Hitler. Doesn't matter anymore. When real, live, honest-to-God Nazis are killing people and marching in the streets and the President of the United States can't quite bring himself to condemn them with no, you know, with no ifs, ands, or buts, no qualifiers, no none of that, Godwin's Law is finished. It's no more. It's pining for the fjords. It's an ex-law, a former Godwin. A Godwin that is singing with the bleeding choir eternal. Yes. So, hey, let's get Friday on the Front Porch going. We'll take a little break, and hopefully everything will work. You're listening to Conversation Radio. You're listening to The Horn, Friday on the Front Porch for the 26th of January, 2018. And I'm Bob Kincaid. Okay? We'll be back.
There's a stain on my notebook where your coffee cup was. Oh, there's ash in the pages. Now I've got myself lost. I was writing to tell you that my feelings tonight are a stain on my notebook that brings your goodbye. Says nothing to me.
right offhand, I didn't have any Tide Pod songs, so I just opted for a song I like. Back in the early 80s, I loved Squeeze, not The Squeeze, Squeeze. Great band. So it's 5 past the hour, and let's go over and check in and get Friday on the Front Porch started. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob.
Oh, you have no idea the relief that attends my hearing your voice and connecting with you, because, you know, I had trouble with this computer and Skype all last night, and had to reboot the thing and pull the battery out of it and do all kinds of mean, nasty things. And by the time I was done, it had rolled itself back to January 1st, 2013. And so everything works, and I'm so happy.
Yep, it works.
Hallelujah.
I just walked back in the room from watching my minions out there in the back with Grady. He brought over his RC car, and Grady's running around chasing that car. So he's wearing him out with that car. He's already gone through one battery.
That sounds like fun.
It's fun to watch.
Yeah, how long does it take on the recharge for the batteries?
I'm not sure. I'd have to ask him. But he's out back outside there in the North 40 out there running that car around, and Grady's chasing him.
That sounds like a good little kid thing to be doing.
Yeah, and he made him got him a jump out there too that he can use.
Ooh, that's always good. That's always good. So it's cellar temperature there inside the man cave this evening, then, right? Isn't cellar temperature about 54 degrees?
Well, I would guess, but I'm not in the man cave right now. I'm back in the house where it's nice and toasty warm.
You fold space much more, and it's going to look like origami.
Well, I only got one other place it could be, and that's in the main room with the HDTV. Computer.
Don't give away the secrets, Sparky. Hey, you know, I see we got somebody in the group that we haven't had for a very long time. I see Larry is with us this evening. Are you there, Larry?
He's showing up.
Yeah, Bob. I'm here. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? It's been a while. You okay?
I'm okay. Just, you know, same old, same old. Yeah, Mercedes is still here, thank heavens. She's here helping me out. And I haven't, lost my mom earlier, well, last year.
Yeah, I remember
that. And that was, got used to that. And I guess I'm doing okay.
Good.
A lot of the people that I broke off from you with around the election, they dumped me, so I'm not part of their thing anymore. So,
well, that's all just a pitiful situation, but, you know, doggone it.
Yeah, I'm really upset about it, but what can I do? Can't do very much. I'm okay. I'm just watching. I don't watch the news very much, and I don't pay a whole lot of attention to what's going on. It's too depressing. It depresses me too much. But I decided I would come back in since Dunk is now leading the group again.
He never wasn't leading the group.
Okay. Well, I just thought that Jules had taken a bunch of us and led us off in a different direction. And so in any case, I'm glad to be back.
The door's always open, Larry.
Okay, great. Well, I see that Rick's here. I talked with him last night, and it's always nice to hear from Rick. And
hey, Larry, good hearing from you, Larry.
Yeah. And I don't know who else is on, but I'll just listen and I'll pipe in if I have anything.
Okay. Well,
to say.
I thought I would mention something on February 2nd. And I've talked about this book a lot because I love it. Reverbo turned me onto it a long time ago now. But the miniseries version, or the series version of a book called Altered Carbon, premieres on Netflix on February 2nd, Groundhog Day. And I thought you might find it interesting. It's set in a San Francisco of 500 years in the future.
Okay. And, Altered Carbon.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how they what they do with the cityscape in terms of in terms of what would 500 years do to the Bay Area.
Yeah. Well, if we don't start turning things around here in this country pretty soon, we may end up in that place. Wherever they've set it, I don't know. Hopefully it's not too dystopian.
Oh, no, it's terribly dystopian.
Oh, God, help. Oh, well.
No, it's predicated on a future in which human consciousness can be digitized and placed from body into body into body.
Oh, I see.
And, for instance, interstellar travel is accomplished through transmission of that digital consciousness at faster than light speeds or whatever, instead of trying to get a ship to go that fast.
I see.
And it's among the best science fiction books produced in the in this century thus far. But I just had a note from Hung Like Jesus who says, "I can't wait for that one," and I'm anxious too, although the trailers and stuff have me wondering if maybe they've taken more liberties with the text than perhaps I will approve of. Because my approval means everything.
Tell me something, Bob. I've asked a bunch of people this question. What is the difference between the TV that I have, which is 30 years old, and a smart TV? What does a smart TV do that the old
I'm just answering off the cuff. One, an old TV, I mean, that's just a CRT, that's a cathode ray tube TV, as opposed to an LCD or LED flat screen. And then there's questions of definition. You know, high definition is at least 740 pixels up to 1080, and now there's what's called 4K. And that's ultra high definition. But the smart part of it, I think, comes in because it'll receive wireless internet, and a lot of them come preloaded with things like Hulu and Amazon and Netflix. Does that jibe with your understanding, Sparky?
Sparky?
I'm not Sparky, but you are correct, Bob.
Oh, okay. So, I've got it, Steve. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've heard that they're fairly, well, I don't know what cheap means for people. I don't know what expensive or inexpensive means.
The prices have come way down. I mean, you can get a 42-inch TV for $300 now.
Mm-hmm. And I can weigh in on that. I got an upgrade. I had a Panasonic plasma TV, about a 50-inch, something like that. And I gave that to my ex, and my son and I bought for ourselves for Christmas a 50-inch, basically one of those 4D TVs. You know, it's a real nice one. It's an HD. It's a smart TV, basically. And that was like only for $500, Samsung, I think. So there, you know, we got that on. It was half price because we got it like on Cyber Monday or something like that. So they're much cheaper than they used to be, and the definition is just amazing. I mean, if you ever look at old, let's say old film, like football games, like from the 80s, you know, you look at how bad the video is, the quality versus what you see today. I mean, that's kind of the way that I'd compare it, Larry. You know, the smart TVs versus the, you know, the cathode ray tube TVs, you know?
Because I don't watch mine, you know, I really don't watch it. And because I don't find that much of the programming jives with what my political views might be or what I might want to support in terms of what they what the programs are promoting politically or culturally. You know what I'm saying, folks?
Yeah, there's, you know, there's a lot of programming out there, Larry, on like Netflix and Amazon and so forth that, you know, you can see all sorts of good documentaries and, you know, all kinds of good programming. I know you like music. You could probably, get a channel that has live concerts. I mean, all sorts of things, Larry. There's a lot you're missing out there. It's not just the big four as it used to be, you know?
Yeah, well, and so-called smart TVs are set up out of the box to work well for cable cutters.
You know, okay.
People who don't want to spring for cable, but, you know, say you want to watch a movie on Netflix, it's a lot more pleasurable to watch it on a larger screen than it is to, say, watch it on a, you know, an 8-inch iPad or something.
I see. Okay. Okay, that answers my question.
And of course, the smaller you go, the cheaper they become.
Yeah.
I mean, I was surprised you can get, and this is monitors, not TVs, but I was surprised that you can get a 28-inch widescreen computer monitor now for $200. And that was kind of surprising to me.
Okay.
And, you know, we're eventually just moving to the point where we'll plug them into our necks and, you know, that'll, you know, and then we'll just
watch
them.
If we survive that long, and believe me, there are a lot of people who are saying the doom and gloom thing. And if I listen to Republicans, which I try not to, who I try not to listen to, it's just like, Bob, I don't know where it's going to end. I don't know when the pendulum is ever going to swing back. I hope it does soon, because it hasn't. And, but I don't know, you know, hopefully people will wake up and the pendulum will swing back and we'll start getting some jobs for people. Because from what I understand, there's a lot of unemployment and a lot of pain out in the world. But I don't know, you know.
The people are coming, Larry. 2018 is going to be a big election year, I think, and then we have something that's polar.
That's part of the reason why those people, the people that used to be on the chat, dumped me, because they just saw me saying the sky is falling, and getting really depressed. They just said, "We can't take you anymore. You're gone." Anyway, that's.
Well, look. I mean, that's part of why I do the. That's why I try to provide some levity and lightheartedness and some tomfoolery and to go with the program, because things can get pretty grim, and they can get pretty frightening. People are chuckling up their sleeves at the parents who were stuffing their children in storm drains in Hawaii a couple of Saturdays back. Ha ha ha, all those silly Hawaiians, the world isn't coming to an end. Well, they had been told that theirs was.
Yeah.
And you know, we really do have a man baby in the Oval Office who could very possibly, conceivably start a nuclear holocaust in a temper tantrum. I'm not reaching for hyperbole in that, Larry, and I'm not trying to make you feel worse.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like that sign that I've been told hangs in a lot of, in a lot of 12-step meeting rooms. Reality spoken here.
Yeah.
And you know, there are a lot of people out there who. You know, Steiny Axe and the Sparkle Fart powered Unicorn Cavalry Purity Brigade, who are hiding from their complicity in giving us Trump. And so they kind of have to say,
oh, well, no, it's going to be okay. It's not all gloom and doom. I mean, look at the stock market.
Well, the stock market doesn't have a goddamn thing to do my life here in the hills, and it probably doesn't have a lot to do with yours either there in the Bay Area. I don't own stocks. I'm not a day trader. I don't sit around. I don't sit around screaming buy, 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 sell, sell, sell. The only thing I do that, you know, the rates and prices I'm tuned into are how much I pay for a gallon of goddamn gasoline at the station, at the pump, and how much what used to be a 1 pound bag of coffee is, and now it's a 12 ounce bag, bastards. You know, that's my little hillbilly life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, anyway, you know, how's Agnes doing? She okay?
Oh yeah, she's good. She's just one room away from me, and she yells out she yells at me every now and then when I say something stupid. Or
yeah, you know. how's Ferg and
he's doing good, trying to looking for a new job, and that'll probably get better when the weather improves. The whole family's doing pretty good. The grandbabies are growing like a weed, or like three weeds, and you know, we're just leading our happy little hillbilly lives, Larry.
Okay, that's good. I haven't talked to Duncan. I'm glad I'm back.
You just wander in anytime. You're absolutely always welcome.
Okay, great.
All right, Larry, let's move around. Clarity.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Clarity joins us. Hey, what's happening, Clarity?
In the year 2525, if man is still alive.
Yeah, how long ago was that?
She'll be here all week. Don't try the veal. Don't forget to tip your server. Yes.
No, remember how nervous people were when Reagan put all those missiles in northern Britain?
Oh, yeah.
And we were thinking, oh, Ronnie, please don't push the button. Ronnie, please don't push the button.
Exactly. And what was the news yesterday? That the Union of Atomic Scientists, or whoever runs it, pushed up the doomsday clock 30 seconds? That was inspiring.
Well, and I guess one of the Pacific Fleet is going to drop into Vietnam. And as you may or not think about, was that Vietnam is an enemy of China. And we're looking to get a toehold on that side of Asia again, you know, because the Philippines has been, you know, kind of iffy. You know, and the volcano goes, we might not be able to use them for a port of call.
But the Philippines are our friend now because they've got a bloodthirsty, murderous, psychopathic strongman in the office.
Yes, but the people in the CIA and in the Department of Defense that are watching out for us still know that, you know, things can happen, natural disasters can happen that, you know, makes those places not that useful to us. Just like Puerto Rico now is no use to us because all their infrastructure is destroyed. So why put any money to that when you can spend it bribing people in the U.S., you know? God, I'm sounding really dark today.
That's Clarity, little ray of sunshine.
But you know, it's
I'm a bad influence on y'all.
Yeah, well, it's sometimes I go, well, at least Bob's a little more depressed than I am.
If we were children, your mothers would not let you play with me.
But it's been, you know, kind of this dumpster foreign policy. You destroy things, you come in with a dumper and dumpster and sweep up the stuff you know, sell them more bombs for the next war. You know, everybody's spending money on Syria. For what, you know? For what? Turkey's getting drug into it. For what? You know, it's just for the arms manufacturers. They're the only ones that are making dough off this.
Well, look at what happened about 104 years ago You got the the entirety of Europe and a big hunk of Asia dragged into a conflagration. And again, to use your words, Clarity, for what? And that worked out pretty well for the arms manufacturers too. And in, and I'm sure you remember the scene. Well, you remember the movie Reds, Warren Beatty, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a scene early in it where he's speaking to the liberal club in Portland. And he says, the way I see it, the United States has to enter the war because our industrialists have loaned a boatload of money to Great Britain. And if we don't make sure that Great Britain wins, then the industrialists won't get their money back.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all a game. It's all a game of money, really. It doesn't have anything to do with patriotism or national pride or anything.
Oh, no, that's the sloganeering you use for the rubes. That's like what that goddamn Rain-X ad I was talking about last night.
Magic.
That makes rain magically disappear from your windshield. You know, that's what patriotism magically makes people go out and turn themselves into body parts so that American corporations can turn a tasty profit.
Well, the majority of Americans, speaking of voodoo, believe in angels. But if there were really angels, wouldn't they have made somebody drive off the road or take too much of their medicine or, you know, that are need to be reborn later on or something? I don't know. But, you know, if they believe in Rain-X, they also believe in the archangel and all that other crap that goes along with this depressive end of the world thing. And every religion has that apocalyptic thing, even the Buddhists.
I think because there are any number of reasons, but every culture has some memory of some great, and this is the Jungian sort of, you know, deep, ethnic memory or whatever that's sort of so far down we can't get at it and it's hardwired into the genome. But of some great god awful something that happened once that about killed everybody.
Yeah. Well, it might even be, believe it or not, remember there was a mass extinction when we changed from anaerobic to aerobic bacteria. When we got too much oxygen, there was billions and trillions of organisms that died because they couldn't handle oxygen.
Well, there have been any number of mass extinction events. We keep talking about how the dinosaurs died out because of the asteroids, but there were, five or six mass extinction events that we're aware of, and only one was caused by asteroids. The rest of them were circumstance. You know, it's the old, you know, when the TV station goes out, circumstances beyond our control. And
well, cosmology develops, we can see that stars are birthed. You know, in the galaxy, we can see that, you know, there is some regeneration of through supernovas and those events create new stars and new galaxies even.
Well, there's a scientific school of thought that suggests that it's not just time and space that keeps intelligent cultures from, or intelligent life forms from contacting each other. It's the fact that that reaching a level of technical proficiency to reach out into the depths of space is such an energy-intensive process that no culture that arises and develops that level of technology can sustain it because they wind up shitting in their own nest. And in point of fact, there's an argument to be made along these lines, especially if you look at the archaeological and anthropological history of Meso and Central America. You had brilliant cultures rise up one after another after another after another, and they got to a certain point and collapsed. And you can say that about the Maya of the classic and post-classic period. You can say it about the Olmecs. You can say it about the Toltecs. And then, of course, the people we refer to as the Aztecs, Well, they ran headlong into the Spanish. They ran headlong into some disease-bearing monstrosities. But it's all fascinating to ponder.
Well, you can look at time. It's from so many different perspectives, you know. You know, a horizontal aspect of it and a vertical aspect of it. You know, when you add in cosmology, it just takes on a whole different dimension. You know, whether you're just dealing about, you're looking at how things come into being and evolve, plants evolve, you know, all the cosmology and things that are going on in the universe from the beginning, whatever we consider the beginning. Some people are saying now that there was, you know, there's been three galaxies, you know, what we consider, 14 billion years or something, that what we know now as the universe was birthed. And maybe there was one before that.
Oh, sooner. I have this idea that it's all just a big, it's just a thing that's sitting there breathing out and breathing in on a time scale that we can't conceive.
Well, what we're doing now is affecting the other edge of the universe.
Yeah, because the other edge of the universe may be just around the corner. We just don't know.
like the left, the far right, and the far left are just almost touching.
Yeah. Hey, why not? Or all the universes that are touching, like pages in a book. Completely different content from one page to the next, but they lay up right against each other. Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, there are brilliant people who have suspicions, but it's not the brilliant people. It's the people who tell the non-brilliant people, listen, I've got the answer, and you know what? For 1995, I'll tell you. And the next thing you know, Kenneth Copeland, cranky old Kenneth Copeland, standing around on a tarmac somewhere saying, look at this Gulfstream 5 that y'all got me. I mean, it's kind of how it works.
Well, I think to really get to the bottom of things, it's going to take intergenerational studies to, you know, measure it in much longer bits. You know, we can get a lot of stuff from the smallest amount of time, but we're not sure how to measure really long distances and how that these attractions and forces pull on us and actually do have an influence on us. Oh, I know that's woo-woo, isn't it?
Oh, well, no, but it's okay. I mean, Fridays are for that.
Yeah, but, you know, they've been trying to capture these cosmic rays, you know, that they've been trying to, you know, get one. In, you know, digging down deep in the mines in Ontario, Canada. So they figure it's going to be slowed down a little bit when it's going through.
Some bitches better be careful. There's liable to be a Balrog down there.
You know, they know that they're going through us at any given time, and it's got to, you know, be causing mutations. So they're it's the invisible hand.
But I think our mythologies always come out of some sort of conflict and chaos, Clarity. Agnes and I watched a couple of nights ago a lovely little film called Goodbye, Christopher Robin. And it was about A.A. Milne and Daphne Milne, his wife, and little Christopher Robin, who did not like to be called Christopher Robin. But the setup to the film, and I'm not spoiling anything, is that Milne had a profound and life-changing experience in that aforementioned little dust-up that started in 1914. his particular bad time of it came at something called the Psalm. And as the film was sort of unfolding, I took a minute and I paused and I looked at Agnes and I said, you know, it's at about the same time that A.A. Milne is trying to work out his World War I experience through the stories that he begins to put together of his son and Winnie the Pooh. I said, at the very same time, a young World War I veteran and academic hopeful by the name of Tolkien is creating an entire alternate universe, or the beginnings of an entire alternate universe, and delving into myth to understand the horror in his own way. And there is always this rich body of literature that comes out of these nightmares. You know, you get the Lost Generation and this quantum leap in fiction as literature that's headed up by people like Hemingway and John Dos Passos. And then you have what comes after World War II with, among others, Joseph Heller's Catch-22, or From Here to Eternity. And then you've got The Naked and the Dead, and all of, you know, And it's sick that they're triggers to our creativity, but human beings have to work shit out. And to a certain extent, it makes sense. I mean, if you wander off into the caves in Europe, you'll find that people were drawing pictures on walls of buffalo, you know, of bison hunts and stuff like that. We feel driven to put things into some sort of an order. Out of a world which is decidedly lacking in it. And oh my God, what's the millennial generation gonna write coming out of Trump mania, if we can manage to evade war? I don't know that my generation has. I mean, there's been some good writing and everything. But it's odd that my generation really, really hasn't had to face anything along those lines, those definitional and transformative sorts of moments.
Well, I was just thinking the other day.
Hey, John.
And hey, what's up, guys? Good to be with you tonight. Speaking of generational stuff, I feel like people who like the generation that was been through the Great Depression, they were really good about labor rights. My generation is the. Well, I'm not to say that you guys, this generation, doesn't care about these issues. I'm saying, by and large, in general, my generation is like that again too, because most of us graduated from high school into the freaking economy after 2000, in the wake of the 2008 crash or whatever. But I was just thinking the other day, I thought. You know, the baby boomer generation, and before I get into this, I'm not gooning on you baby boomer guys. Bob, you're more of a Gen Xer, but I mean, I'm not gooning on you guys, okay? This is you guys in the Horn Family Community Congregation, you know what's up. You got it right, you know? But the baby boomer generation pretty much fucked my generation, man. And I'm sorry to say that because, unions are so dead now. Like, there's pretty much no unions because the administration. I'm sorry.
Don't be downgrading unions now.
Well, he wasn't. He's saying they're practically non-existent.
Yeah, they are. They're practically non-existent now. And
in some areas.
Well, where I'm at, man, in central Pennsylvania, if you even bring up the word union in these factories, you're out. They'll fire you. And if you unionize, don't just close the company down, And it's like, so that's one point. The unions are, during the Reagan administration, a lot of it goes back to the Reagan administration, too. But so the unions, nobody wanted to fight for them back then. Maybe some people were, but, you know, if they were, it was failure. And then there's the point of the fact that Social Security was raised, the age was raised to 67. I guess at first they were going to do it for everybody, and I'm sure some of the people that were on it already or going to be on it soon were saying, oh, no, we'll throw your asses out of office. And they probably said, oh, well, okay, we'll just fuck the next generation. And then they probably, and I guess a lot of them, people back in the Reagan era said, okay, doesn't affect me.
Well, that's what people sat around and let happen to my generation. I don't get to retire at 62. Shit, I don't get to retire at 65.
That's what I'm saying. They fucked the next.
No, the generation now, ahead of me said, hey, look, yeah, that generation down below us, shit. They're still starting their careers and stuff. Yeah, let's go ahead and fuck them.
Yeah, and it happened.
Because that shit, now, you know, that shit happened when I was 20s, 30, you know, whatever. Yeah, it was easy because we were busy going to concerts and not having to be in wars and not having anything asked of us. So yeah, screw them.
Right, and then like now, I feel like a lot of people. A lot of people voted for Trump on all generations, but again, a lot of the people voted for Trump and fucked my generation again, even though a damn good fair amount of millennials voted for Trump. And just aside, the other day you were talking about that Courtland Sykes guy who said that millennial women went against Hillary. That's not true. That's not what the numbers show.
That was just, you know, another goddamn right-wing lie.
Right. And I'm just trying to get some of the stuff that's been on my mind so that everybody else can talk and you don't have to hear from me. And the two other points, you know, what we have now is a right-wing. Right-wing cult took over the government. And I have not heard the term cult being used a lot. And, you know, it's worrisome because last time a right-wing cult took over a government, a whole lot of people up and got all dead. But I don't think these people are going to commit violence directly. I think they're going – it's an indirect thing because, you know, you might have talked about the story where the guy, young man from Michigan or Missouri or whatever, was threatening CNN studios and saying – and using the phrase fake news because he's in the cult. And this is the disgusting things that Trump is doing. Guys, he's brainwashing people, legitimately brainwashing people. And some of it might be traced back to Fox News because the crashing of my father.
Well, and John, in the particular case of that young man, that 19-year-old in Michigan, I have a feeling we're going to find out if the story, if anybody follows up on the story. The kid's not all home. And that in itself is a story. The fact that Trump and the steady drumbeat of Trumpism, it has a profound effect on people who are susceptible. No, I'm trying to be gentle here. Who are susceptible to that kind of suggestion. I mean, this kid lives in a home where they don't have any guns. He doesn't have a gun. Daddy doesn't have a gun. Nobody's got a gun. Now, the kid can get a kid's 19 years old, and even if he is, even if he has mental disabilities, he can still get a gun easier than he can get a fishing license in a place like Michigan. But the fact of the matter is, there are so many people who are part of our community who deal with disability issues. I want to say it in as gentle a way as I can and as respectful a way as I can, but I think this kid was just getting on the phone and and had had his mind hurt by the filth that has been pouring into it.
And that's where it goes back to what I was saying about brainwashing. Trump is brainwashing people. I think he's a lot more intelligent than people think he is. You know what I'm saying? I know a lot of people would take issue with me saying that, with my saying that, but I do. That's what I think. And there's a woman who made a documentary called The Brainwashing of My Father, and it talked about how her father used to be a pretty progressive guy, and then until he got a hold of Rush Limbaugh, Fox News, and they just did the whole documentary. It blows your mind because goes in fine detail about how these the right wing filth machine on these, you know, through Rush Limbaugh and through Fox News, legitimately brainwashed her dad. And now I think Trump is called a personality, and he's either brainwashed by Fox News and is spreading it, or he knows what he's doing.
Well, I guarantee you, you could turn on Fox News right now and there'll be some meathead on there trying to convince you that Mueller needs to resign.
Right.
They're so in the tank for Trump, man. It's just over the top.
Fox News will never be on a TV set again in this house as long as I'm alive.
Cult, dude. It's all about the cult. You don't hear about it. And then I come to find out today, and this is another thing I wanted to bring up to you guys and see what you get your thoughts on it. I saw an article where Bill Nye is going to be going to the State of the Union to fucking kiss the ring because he wants to convince people, members of his cabinet and Republican members of Congress, that it's important that we fight climate change. What do these people think they're going to get out of it? You know?
Who's inviting him?
The guy that was picked to be head of NASA, another climate denier, and he's some kind of a teabagger GOP congressman, and he didn't get confirmed for the NASA job yet, but that's who he's going for. He's going there to support that guy, and he said, I've been working closely with whatever the guy's name is, forget what his name is, starts with a B, and he's like, I've been working closely with him to discuss, you know, the urgency of climate change. But then the guy goes on Fox News and talks, or whatever, and talks about how climate change is a bunch of bullshit. So why is Bill Nye doing this? It's the cult is spreading. The cult is spreading. So it's worrisome to me. I don't understand what these people think they're getting out of it.
Can I address that? I really doubt that Bill Nye has gone over to the dark side. I'd be real surprised.
The guy is a
science guy. I mean, I don't know why he's going to the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini State of the Union.
So here's the story, Rick.
Okay.
TV host Bill Nye, the science guy, is riling a number of environmentalists over his decision to attend President Trump's first State of the Union address as a guest of a Republican congressman. Representatives for ClimateTruth.org, Climate Hawks Vote, and Demand Progress delivered petitions with over 35,000 signatures to Nye on Friday that expressed how bewildered and disappointed supporters were by his decision to attend the speech on January 30th. Nye plans to attend as the guest of... Oh my God, you've got to be fucking kidding me! Nye plans to attend as the guest of Representative Jim Bridenstine, Republican of Oklahoma. This isn't just some Republican. This is a real chase-him-with-a-butterfly-net Republican who is Trump's pick to head NASA. John was telling us the skinny. In a statement, the petitioners called Nye's attendance with Bridenstine a tacit endorsement of his controversial nomination and history of climate denial and bigotry. This is awful. Maybe awful's the wrong, but yeah, I can understand why people would be dismayed by this, because he will be used as a propaganda tool. The only way it works for me is if he goes and he blinks out messages in Morse fucking code while he's with him.
Well, they were already talking about how the GOP that want to get this guy confirmed are going to use him, like you just said, they're going to use him as a means to do so.
Okay, well, I stand corrected there. I missed this story, but yeah, it doesn't make any. What does he have to gain by being there with being there as a guest of a climate change denier? You know.
Well, he's like, saying
it's not,
that he.
It's not like it's he's like, going to be part of any debate, right? I mean, it's, he's just it's like be what sitting there,
Rick. It's like what John said. He says, I've enjoyed a productive working relationship with Congressman Bridenstine on space issues. At the State of the Union address, I hope to hear the president present plans for an ambitious, science-driven space exploration agenda. Space exploration brings out the best in us. It brings the nation together as we solve problems that have never been solved before and learn more about the cosmos and our place within it. I think that's a little bit naive on Bill Nye's part. I also understand what Brother Deacon Asa says when he says, Bill Nye understands that you won't be heard unless you have a seat at the table. But the point is, the table has to have people of good faith around it, I guess I would say. And in light of the fact that Trump may shut down our participation in the International Space Station as early as 2025, this does not bode well. The only way we're going to explore space under Trump is if there's some way he gets to build a hotel on the fucking moon, okay?
With his logo, of course, on it.
Oh, visible from Earth.
Yeah. Flashy neon sign.
But to catch on what John was saying earlier, Trump could get up there Tuesday night and fart in the mic for 2 hours, and Fox News will convince the minions that he hit it out of the park. And they'll just keep hammering it and hammering it and hammering it. That's kind of why we're in the mess we're in.
Who's taking one for the team? Because I ain't watching it.
Well, I will be. That's my job.
I'll scan through them, stomach as much as I can.
I'll watch the Democratic response.
Yeah, I think the only way to watch a Trump State of the Union is to participate in it as like a drinking game.
Like, yeah, some of us can't do that anymore, Rick. Some of us can't do that anymore. We just have to stare in wide-eyed horror at the majestic shittiness of it all.
Yeah.
But seriously. To address what Steve said, that is fully what I expect Fox to do. That's not going to bother me nearly as much as the punditry and the well-paid reporters from other outlets who will say, "Well, goodness gracious, he didn't drop trowel and shit right in front of everybody. How presidential he's become." Because that'll happen. If he manages to speak the words on the teleprompter, not jam one finger up his nose and the other up his ass, and whistle the Star Spangled Banner at the same time, he will be presidential. It's a little thing called normalizing.
That's what Bill Nye is doing too. He's normalizing this racist fucking bastard. You know, it's and you're right. It happens every time. Every time he doesn't, like you say, like Steve says, fart into the mic, you know, so to speak. Everybody praises him, and it goes back to. And I think I can't hammer on this enough. It goes back to this is a cult, and a lot of times cults spread, and there's a lot of brainwashing that goes on in cults too.
Darlene in Connecticut points out, brainwashing is manipulation on steroids, and you do not need to be intelligent or smart to be manipulative. No, psychopaths and sociopaths are manipulative. Narcissists, when it rises to the point of pathology, are manipulative.
Bob, can I throw a question out to the horn community?
You can do anything you want to, Steve. It's a regular joint.
All right. Well, it looks like shit's really hitting the fan now. I mean, they've come out, New York Times come out with an article last night, I'm sure this is old news, everybody knows it, that Trump wanted Mueller fired back in June, and his advisor says, look, if you do that, we're all going to quit. I mean, with all that stated, what's it going to take for the House to impeach this asshole? I mean, what's it going to take?
Is that rhetorical or a real question?
It's a real question.
I think you know my answer.
If they're all, they got to have an ounce of self-preservation themselves, though. I mean, they want to save their cushy jobs. Do you really think they're going to go down the toilet with him?
Tell you what it's going to take, Steve. It's going to take a excoriating report by Mueller delivered to Congress directly implicating Trump in the collusion with Russia and in obstruction of justice and maybe money laundering, and Congress either impeaching the guy or, you know, the Democrats taking control of the House in 2018.
Yeah, that would be nice.
And then impeaching him, or if the Republicans fail to act on an excoriating report linking, you know, Trump to specific crimes, then there's nothing stopping Mueller necessarily from indicting Donald and letting the courts decide whether a sitting president can be indicted. Let the Supreme Court say he can't be indicted if, you know, the crimes listed in the indictment and in the report are just so glaring, you know, that, you know, there's no reason, you know, that he should be in the office.
And you know what? The Supreme Court might hesitate to do that, Rick, because someday they might reason there might be a Democrat president who needs to be indicted.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Well, you know, I just want to pop in before I get on with my routine here. I hate to sound ignorant, like I want to put my head in the sand, but I really have been putting my head in the sand because a lot of the stuff that I think, first of all, the whole situation in the country scares me. I don't know why I'm scared, but I'm scared. And I just feel that the talking about, you know, all this stuff about is just, you know, a diversionary situation, and that we really ought to be talking about the more important aspects of why is there no manufacturing in the country? Why are people not able to function, you know, at the level and be able to be, why is the country not able to be productive and provide jobs and that kind of thing? And I don't really like to watch Mr. Trump because I just have a visceral desire to take my head and put it in the sand. Bob and Rick and Duncan and everyone else, but that's the way I feel. Maybe you can explain why.
Larry, I think it's your way of dealing with this. It's your defensive mechanism. Everybody has a different way of dealing with adversity. And sometimes it's better, you know, sometimes denial is more than just a river in the Nile, you know?
I think you kind of blew the metaphor there, Rick.
Strategy, but, yeah. I mean, in the short term anyway, not the long term.
I was being
facetious. When Mueller calls for his press conference, fasten your seatbelt. That's going to be one hell of a day.
Okay, so look, of everything that Rick said, the part that I agree with most is, in answer to Steve, in answer to your question, what's it going to take? What it's going to take at a bare minimum is taking the reins of power away from Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell.
So you don't think, regardless of what comes out, they're not going to move towards impeachment?
What do you think, they're just throwing shit at the wall to see what sticks. What do you think all the business about the text messages is? All the business about Mueller's conflicts of interest that Trump's talking about.
Oh, and they keep talking about Hillary. My God, that's so ancient.
No, focus. Wait a minute.
Okay.
The business about Mueller's conflicts of interest. The secret society. Right. The text messages.
The text messages.
The coup.
the secret memo that Devin Nunez wrote with his special secret memo crayon.
Is that the proverbial shiny object? Don't look over here. Look
nope.
over here.
Exactly. No, that's not what it is. Let's go back to the fact that impeachment is not a criminal proceeding. It is not even a legal proceeding. It is a political proceeding that operates under a set of rules that is redesigned every time it's put in play. Every impeachment is an ad hoc proceeding, as if it, you know, as if it had never happened before. And so the House can choose not to impeach no matter what evidence is put before it. And so what they have done is they have created these reeds to which they can cling as an excuse. Oh, we simply don't believe Mueller because he's got terrible conflicts of interest and bad breath. Okay?
And so that's how
they choose not to act.
And Fox News is pushing that narrative with steroids.
Sure, and that's why, Steve.
Yep.
So next part. The only reason Nixon wound up in the bind he was in is because there were Republicans who went to the White House and said, "You're fucked, buddy." Well, those Republicans do not exist in 2018. Let's just get used to that fact.
Or if they do exist, they're about to resign or, you know, term out and not run for re-election, right?
Well, but even that, wait. Because you have to understand what happened to the Republican Party in the wake of Nixon's resignation and Watergate.
Yeah.
In the election next following Nixon's resignation, the Republicans lost 49 seats in the House of Representatives and 5 seats in the Senate.
Wow.
And so the lesson for modern Republicans is there's no percentage in going after the president because the American people will still hold you responsible. So they're going to sit tight and hope that they can ride through the 2018 elections. And I know that there's a certain contingent of people out there, the Glenn Greenwalds and the Caitlin Johnstones of the world who, if Vlad, Big Bad Vladdy Daddy stood right in front of them and said, I did it with Little Hatchet, would say, "No, you didn't. You're wonderful. Bless your little heart."
Here is hooky pee-pee tape.
So I understand that contingent exists. But there are also a lot of threads to pull that run between Russian oligarchs and Republican members of the House and Senate, and the Russians and the NRA and their contributions. Okay, so they may just try to brazen it out as long as the damning information from their server hack is still hidden.
Mm.
So there's nothing, there is absolutely not a damn thing that tells me that the Republicans will take action on impeachment, even if Mueller comes out and says, you know, it's not just that we think this, we've got recordings of him saying it. So don't be surprised if that's the case. And don't be surprised if he fires Mueller and nothing happens.
So there is no straw that's going to break the camel's back, not even if Mueller produced a pee-pee tape. You don't think people would be disgusted enough, even by something that extreme?
Well, look at Stormy.
Look at Stormy Daniels.
Thing, Steve.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, he was actually sticking Tiny Trumpy in her. The PP tape stood by and watched whores piss all over the place where Barack and Michelle slept, while he stood off in his business suit and watched them do it.
Yeah.
just so sick and over the top, though. And that's the leader of the free world.
The leader of the free world is Angela Merkel.
Yeah, poorly phrased, Steve. But
no, that's the president of the United States in 2018.
Right. So, in answer to my question, there is no straw that's going to break the proverbial camel's back.
Alma says these folks are in panic mode, Republicans, that is. Please do not fall into panic. They are caught already. You know, some may be caught, and that's the thing. There are a lot who are caught. There are a bunch of people who are going to dance to whatever tune Bob Mueller pipes. I'm going to give myself another pat on the back for pointing out that, you know, thank you, Al Franken. You're the one, Al Franken, who put paid to Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. He did that in front of God and everybody in the Senate, and brought Sessions' perfidy out into the open. Naturally, the upright Christian women's Democratic delegation got rid of Al Franken. Boy, wouldn't you love to have Al Franken in the Senate for an impeachment trial?
Mm.
Thank God, Kamala Harris and Kirsten Gillibrand saved us from that fate, having an effective prosecutor. Yeah. But there are a lot of people who are going to go down. And it may be Jared and Don Jr. If there's an end game that involves there still being a majority in the House and the Senate that's Republicans, it may be this. And this has everything to do with what kind of person Trump is and nothing to do with what kind of people the House and Senate majorities are. If Mueller nails Jared dead to rights, and if he nails Don Jr. dead to rights, and it basically takes everybody around Donald Trump to the point that he's standing there alone and goes to him and says, listen, you resign, everything's okay. That's how you get rid of Donald Trump. If he doesn't decide to brazen it out, and if, in fact, he doesn't throw Jared and Don Jr. to the wolves. And I fully expect he would sell out the bones of his own sainted mammy to save his own own stinking skin. He's that kind of person.
Well, his ego is just that inflated. Yes, I truly believe
his,
that.
His only loyalty is to Donald Trump. I mean, when you come right down to it, that's how you wind up sticking Tiny Trumpy in Stormy Daniels 3 months after your son is born to your super hot Eastern European model wife.
But according to the evangelicals, it doesn't matter because that all happened before he was president. So,
he's not perfect, Steve. Just forgive him.
Just forgive him. Jesus, what a hell of a mess.
I'm still hoping somebody will bring, some Democrat will make Stormy Daniels his guest at the State of the Union, but I don't expect anybody
That'd
to
be wonderful.
That'd
she's
be
on,
rich.
She's on a national tour right now, right, Bob?
She could
make America horny again?
Yeah, she could book a strip joint in, I'm pretty sure she could book a strip joint in Washington, D.C. for the 30th of January.
There you go. Yeah.
I have no doubt whatsoever. Meanwhile, in line with what you just said about the evangelical response to Trump's nasty, well, behold, helmet-haired, proud son of Stanford University, Brian Fisher of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mazzuppistan, spokesman for the evangelicals.
That's where I'm at on Donald Trump. I'm not going to change my mind about that. I think it's perfectly reprehensible what he did. There's nothing going to change my mind about that, assuming for the sake of argument that he did it. But here's the reality, George. Regardless of what I think about what Donald Trump did, he is still our president. He's still going to be the president today. He's going to be the president tomorrow. Not going to be impeached over this thing. He's not going to be removed from office. So we can weep and wail and gnash our teeth, kind of like we did with Bill Clinton. But it didn't make any difference. Bill Clinton kept right on being president. So I think we still have to deal with life as it's handed to us. We still have to look at contemporary events. We still need to look at the policies that the president is advocating. Do we agree with them? Do we disagree with them? If there are policies that are good, there's no reason for us not to support him just because he did such a tawdry thing 11 years ago. I'm not gonna punish America because of what he did 11 years ago. That wouldn't make any sense whatsoever.
See? Now, bear in mind, helmet-headed, proud son of Stanford, Brian Fisher of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, Stan, didn't say any such thing about Bill Clinton back in 1998. Bill Clinton was a sick, deviant pervert who should probably be castrated just to keep him from having his sick, deviant perversions put before the children of America anymore, and he should be run out of the White House and not allowed inside the United States. I mean, Jesus, I remember, okay? But the fact of the matter is, what he said is true. You know, we're getting out of him what we want. Why should we turn our backs on him? These people are morally and ethically dead and bankrupt. Their savior, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, described the likes of Brian Fisher and these other evangelicals as whited sepulchers. In other words, places where dead, putrid flesh is put, but they paint it all pretty and white on the outside. Did I lose you guys?
No, I'm still here.
Okay.
Yeah, the putrid flesh is what's got me, Bob.
Well, that's why whited sepulchers are disgusting. They look all nice and tidy and white inside on the outside, but they're all full of rottenness on the inside. This is the same guy who defended Roy Moore. You know, sure, okay, yeah. He liked to molest little girls, but that was 30 years ago, and we need a Republican in that seat. Besides, God's forgiven him.
Tell that to the victims of so-called Dr. Joseph Nasser, right? It happened so long ago. It was 20 years ago, you know?
Yeah.
Why punish him for that?
Meanwhile, I got a note in from Steve on the Gulf Coast. Steve said, this just in, courtesy of Alpha Centauri. Any scientific technological culture that produces and then listens to the likes of a science guy is, pardon me, terminal. And what was that being discussed earlier about advanced cultures often shitting in their own backyard? Ta-da! Yep, regards, Steve on the Gulf Coast. Meanwhile, Alma says, oh, these poor evangelicals. They are caught also. They will be mired in hell forever in what they believe. Aren't we all destined to bring to ourselves what we fear? Wow, that's profound. Aren't we all destined to bring to ourselves what we fear? And Jim, who has a firm grasp on history and a predilection for it, says, Trump's first State of the Union will be January the 30th, 2018. And then he says, I wonder if there's any significance to that compared to, say, January 30th, 1933, a Monday. It was January 30th, 1933, but you know who was named Chancellor of Germany.
Hey, speaking of January 30th, we have a lot of things going on, or maybe it's the 31st. There's like three astronomical events in one day. We have a full moon, a blue moon, a full moon, and it's a super moon as well.
Yes, I get one. I've never gotten a full blue super moon for my birthday. I thought it was rather nice of the universe.
That is nice. So it's the 31st, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is the day after the 30th. So on January 30th of 1933, was that when Hitler was made chancellor? Or
yes, that's
was that the date of the election?
That's the day that he became chancellor and was sworn in by Paul von Hindenburg.
Okay.
Who had famously remarked, "I can manage this Hitler."
Mm-hmm.
That is chilling.
It sounds a lot like Neville Chamberlain's, you know, "We have peace in our time" proclamation, right? After negotiating with Hitler.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, that's all he wants. He doesn't want to grab any more land, you know? We've sated his appetite, you know? Not so fast.
And those were
can I make an announcement?
Do please.
That's really cool. We've got a woman running against Doug LaMalfa that looks pretty interesting.
Oh, and I saw him being interviewed the other day, and he's a real horse's ass.
She was at the Women's March in Chico and the Women's March in Redding, and I think she's from Auburn, California. Our district's a big district. I think she was on a city council there or something.
Well, that's good. I hope she's got a shot.
It's nice to have somebody new running against him instead of the same old tired guy from Fall River.
So do you think she's got a chance, Dunk?
I hope so.
Yeah. You know what I'd like? I'd like somebody to run against that asshole Devin Nunez, who doesn't, who's not too far from you who he represents.
Did you see the thing I posted on him, the Fresno Bee?
No.
It's pretty bad when your hometown newspaper calls you Trump stooge.
Well, yeah.
I think he's going to get voted out. He may not even run again.
Is he out of Fresno?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, he should just go back to his family farm, you know? Right. I think his family like has a vineyard or something like that. I forget what it is exactly, but.
Well, LaMalfa can go back and pound rice as far as I'm concerned.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
Stupid rice farmer.
How long has he been your representative?
I don't know, three terms in the Congress, and then he was state senator for two terms, and in the assembly for however he term limited out each one. And then Wally Herger, who was our do nothing congressman for like 26 years.
Oh, okay.
He stepped aside, and LaMalfa just waltzed right in there.
Hmm.
Well, now the same guy that has run like, I don't know, five times a Democrat from Fall River, his lawyer from Fall River, my wife knows because we used him in a probate thing or something.
Yeah.
But he ran every 2 years, same guy, and he couldn't get nowhere.
So same boring campaign.
Yeah, somebody from the southern edge of the district can get something going. And I think LaMalfa burned his bridge with a lot of these town halls he did last year.
Was that over the Obamacare or what?
Yeah, and everything. I mean, they just everywhere he went, in invisible groups hounded him.
Well, that's good.
Rick, the car thief, Daryl Issa, he's not running again, is he?
No, he decided not to. He was, he almost got beat. He came within, like, I think, maybe as little as anywhere from 500 to 2,000 votes of losing last election. They had to have a recount, as I recall.
A primary or in the general?
No, in the general. He was up against a decorated army or, you know, military veteran. I'm not sure who the fellow was exactly, but he ran a pretty strong candidacy, the opponent.
Hopefully and he's going to give it another try.
Who is?
Who? I heard he's running again, though. I heard he changed his mind.
Who?
Issa?
Yeah, I heard he changed his mind. Look that up. I'm not sure, but I heard he changed his mind.
He might change districts. He might try to run in Duncan Hunter's district.
Oh, okay. Okay, maybe. Yeah. Yeah, maybe that's what he's going to do, you know. The guy's enough of a grifter and a fraudster to do something like that, you know. Change districts, you know.
That's what I heard a while back.
Okay, well, maybe you're right.
Through the rumor mill.
Well, he's the richest member of the House, you know.
Running against, on Hill lets me know, running against Devin Nunez is Andrew Jans, a Democrat and prosecutor. So, looks hopeful. So thank you, Angel, for letting us know. Much obliged.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Rick.
I've been meaning to tell you, you got to be careful with your gimmick infringement because, do you know there's a real live horn nutraceuticals company out there?
I saw that email. I'm not. I think parody falls under fair use.
No, I'm joking. It's a non-commercial purpose, so that's the only time you get in trouble under the Lanham Act, you know. So I found that hard to believe. There's like some outfit here in La Mirada or whatever, which is in LA County.
Well, what's even
a DBA of Horn Nutraceuticals.
What's equally as interesting is there's a right-wing asshat out there who's using our font and the name.
Really?
The Horn News.
Huh.
And the only difference is we've got a microphone in the logo, and he's got a bull's horns.
Oh. Hmm.
By the way, Brother Deacon Asa wants to know, anyone want to get a horn giant State of the Union Trump on-air stroke pool going? I mean, I presume it's Trump's on-air stroke, and what time does it start, though? I don't think I'll be on the air for it. I think it'll fall during Malloy's time.
Don't they usually start at 9, typically, EST?
Yeah, that's right after your program.
Yep.
Yeah. Mr. Speaker! Yeah, sorry. I missed my calling. I could have been the Mr. Speaker guy.
That's you could have been a contender, Bob.
That's the sergeant at arms of the House, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the guy who gets to evict Trump from the White House once he's removed from office. No, I don't think so.
Oh, this is interesting. This is food for fruit for discussion. Alan just sent this along. Kurt, via MSN, headline, Soros to Google and Facebook, your days are numbered. Just making sure, yeah, MSN. Billionaire investor George Soros launched a scathing attack on tech giants at the Davos summit on Thursday, calling them monopolies that could be manipulated by authoritarians to subvert democracy. During an annual dinner he hosts at the World Economic Forum, held this week, yada, 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 he set his sights, turned his sights on a host of subjects, including U.S. President Donald Trump and the speculation frenzy surrounding Bitcoin. But much of his ire was reserved for the tech giants of Silicon Valley, who, he argued, need to be more strictly regulated. Facebook and Google effectively control over half of all Internet advertising revenue. They claim that they are merely distributors of information. The fact that they are near monopoly distributors makes them public utilities and should subject them to more stringent regulations aimed at preserving competition, innovation, and fair and open universal access. That's an interesting concept because in his flatter than piss on a plate address, which happened, I guess, about 2 o'clock Eastern time, 8 o'clock, or a little after, or eight, two, anyway, it was 8 o'clock Eastern time, 2 o'clock European Central time. One of the things that he remarked on, while everybody else was saying, ooh, he got booed, and he did, because he said fake news, and everybody in the room booed him. Oh, and look at the red lights going off. Look at the red lights going off. There's never a picture of the lights, of the cameras, and there aren't any red lights going off. That's just shit that he makes up. But so he got booed for that. But in his speech, he said, we've eliminated choking regulations. Well, the fact of the matter is, the regulations that they've eliminated are going to make people choke.
Yeah.
Because they're contributing to COPD deaths, asthma deaths, deaths brought on by the particulate content of air from filthy-ass coal-fired power plants. And on top of it all, one of his appointees over at EPA just rolled back what was called the once in, always in rule. You ever heard of that? It's a rule it's a rule that says if you're a massive polluter and you are deemed to be within the ambit of the Clean Air Act and you are brought into that group for oversight, for monitoring, that once you're in, you know, it's the Hotel California. You can check out anytime you want, but you can never leave. Once in, always in. So power plants and coal companies and, you know, homicidal capitalist assholes like that have pissed and moaned about that for ages, and they finally got somebody in there to do something about it. So he's going to let things like massive polluting coal-fired power plants out of that heightened level of scrutiny under the theory that, well, you know, if it's stifling their creativity, it's stifling innovation. Bullshit. It's keeping people from fucking dying, and they're dying anyway. It just means more will die. So the goddess of irony just sort of tapped me on the shoulder when he said stifling or choking regulations or regulations choking business.
Yeah.
You know, that sorry fucker has never exerted himself to the point of being short of breath in his entire life. And I'm pretty damn sure he's never watched somebody gasping for their last breath. And he's never, you know, our wonderful, beautiful, fabulous coal miners. He's never been around one as a coal miner struggled for his last breath like a fish out of water after breathing coal dust in the mines all his life. And he's worried about business being choked, suffocated.
That's total bullshit. Speaking of suffocating, I read an article in the New Yorker by a journalist named Megan Stack, no relation, but she used to write for the LA Times, and apparently she's now like a freelancer, and she lives in New Delhi, India, and she moved there like 4 years ago from Beijing, China. And the article is all about how bad the air quality is. And you basically have to stay inside all day there when they have, you know, during the wintertime when they have the bad smog and stuff. And you've got to have like these real high tech, you know, HEPA filters and all these, you know, high tech filters in your house unless you want to breathe the bad air. And the kids can't even go to school on days like that. And she thought when she moved from Beijing to New Delhi that it was going to get better, but it's probably, you know, gotten just about, you know, it's gotten worse probably. So, I mean, those are the policies that lead to, you know, air quality like that, where you, let's say 30,000 people a day in New Delhi are dying from, you know, from COPD or whatever, you know, because not everybody can afford to,
yeah, asthma,
you know, live sure. in a, you know, hermetically sealed bubble and have their air filtered and so forth, you know?
Right, right, exactly. And you're in Southern California, Rick. Watch for the return of smog.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Of course, y'all are, possibly so. I mean, you've got all the exhaust issues. You don't have a bunch of coal-fired power plants around you, at least, but...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're probably okay because what has made Southern California's air better is the AQMD, or the air quality regulates, you know, emissions. And it does a lot of the work that, let's say, the federal government does in other states that don't have a robust, you know, EPA of its own or a robust environmental agency of its own. And so we're probably going to be okay. We lost all our manufacturing in the, I'd say, in the 70s and 80s. It left South L.A. and went down to the maquiladoras and then over to China and, you know, the usual, you know, exegesis of the, you know, manufacturing jobs.
Yeah, but we still got our agriculture.
Yeah, we do. We do. And the San Joaquin Valley is probably the most polluted valley in the country now, I think, isn't it, Sparky?
Not from air, maybe groundwater.
I thought it was for the air.
I don't know about San Joaquin, but I know the Sacramento Valley's pretty good. I live here.
Yeah.
We don't have, I mean, the only thing we have to deal with is forest fire smoke in the summer.
Yeah, yeah.
Rick, how
well, that's an every year thing.
Yeah, yeah. Rick, well, I know, Rick, like, Fresno's horrible, and so is Bakersfield as far as the air. Yeah, yeah, Larry.
How's Tracy doing? Have you seen her?
No, I haven't. No, she came on the front porch like a little while ago, maybe a few weeks ago, and talked about her trip to Puerto Rico. I don't know if you knew that. She and her wife went to Puerto Rico.
And her mom,
yeah, yeah. So sounded like they had a good time.
Well, yeah, as far as the air quality is concerned, we've had some rain. I mean, this is not really germane to the conversation. I don't know why I'm bringing it up, but we've had some rain here, and we just have our normal weather and everything. So in any case, I don't know, it's good to be back.
Well, good to have you back, Larry. So speaking of air, how bad was the air quality during the all the fires up in the wine country? How was it in San Francisco? You guys had some pretty bad air, didn't you? Or I should say, you're in Berkeley.
Well, I wasn't really out very much. Yeah, outside very much. I just would go to school.
Uh-huh.
And Mercedes would know more than I would.
Okay.
But, I think a lot of people were out there with the mask. You know, those masks that they wear?
Yeah, yeah.
So people were wearing masks. There were mask days, so
yeah,
people went around. And apparently the air wasn't all that great during that time.
Yeah.
I know the Raiders cut down on their practices during that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was kind of upset with Jerry Brown that he would say to the people that were saying that we shouldn't frack. I think he said, well, we should put these people into the ground that don't want the fracking. I don't know why. Well, I do know why, but I don't understand the governor and why wouldn't slap a huge fine on the oil companies for. I'm not making very much sense. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Well, no, your point about the governor Brown and his being beholden to the, you know, oil companies and the extraction industry is quite well taken. Actually, that's that's been the major blot on his administration, because he's allowed fracking to basically continue unregulated in California, even during the drought we had, which is showing signs of returning if we don't have a good rain season this year, you know? And there's really no excuse to do that.
Don't worry. There'll be plenty of water up here for you guys to steal.
Is there?
I don't know yet.
Just about California, yesterday there was a debate. I don't know if you know this, Duncan. You probably know about this, Rick. There was a debate in UCLA with the current gubernatorial candidates. And what I was told, or what I listened to, the Progressive Caucus chair of the California Democratic Party was saying that there is a rule now that if the incumbent goes up in front of the convention in February and asks for an endorsement, unless there are at least 20% of the people that call and demand that the challenger, you know, that there's enough 20% support for a challenger, the challenger doesn't even have to speak in front of the convention. They're just going to ratify the incumbent. And we have apparently,
well, we don't have to worry about that with Governor Brown. He's turning
Gavin Newsom is running.
Well, we've got Gavin Newsom and Villaraigosa, and I like those two people. But apparently Delaine Easton is also running. She's used to be our superintendent of schools, and apparently she's now considered to be the most liberal candidate of all of them. So I don't know what to say.
Then there's what's his name?
Chang. John Chang?
Yeah, isn't he still running?
Yep.
So, be an interesting primary.
So I don't know if the rest of you outside of California know any of these names, but...
The first two I do, Newsom and Villaraigosa.
Yeah, for the Horn listeners, Villaraigosa was the mayor of Los Angeles for a long time, and Gavin Newsom has been the, the deputy governor or whatever they call it? I forget what they
Lieutenant
call it.
Lieutenant governor, yeah.
Go to.
Right. Lieutenant governor. And he's actually the one who... started the whole push towards same-sex marriage by, when he was governor, ordering the clerks in San Francisco City, the city of San Francisco, to start issuing licenses.
He first
had issue to the head. Huh? What's that?
Yeah, he was mayor of San Francisco, was he not?
Right,
yeah,
right.
But that's he used to marry all kinds of them in the city hall.
Yeah, and his ex-wife is on Fox News now. It's Kimberly Guilfoyle or whatever, if any of you know that who that is.
Well, the big concern is whether or not Villaraigosa and Newsom are as progressive as they like to have, as they presented themselves as being, given where they get their money. And believe me, I'm not an accountant, and so I haven't been following where Gavin Newsom or Villaraigosa or John Chang or any of these people are getting their funding from. Go on, Rick. Go on.
The sunset better. Better. I was kind of held up with that cold there for a while.
But what I'm saying is, I don't know whether or not I should worry about who their campaign funders are, whether that really makes any difference about how they're going to govern. But maybe I'm naive not to. But the two front runners are said to have taken a lot of money from oil and from the pharmaceutical companies. Rick, what do you know about that, or does that really make a difference in this day and age?
Larry, I shut down Rick because he had company or something in there, something going on.
Okay,
in the background.
Bob and Dunk and everybody, how would you respond to that if the two front running candidates, who are seen to be progressives, are really taking money from regressive people or
all I know is Gavin Newsom seems to be really good buddies with Bill Maher, and he was really into the pot initiative when that was going.
Gavin Newsom first came to my attention years ago because Michael the Savage Wiener, who broadcasted, I don't know, is he still in the air? I don't know. But he broadcasted from San Francisco, you know, Sodom on San Francisco Bay that he railed against constantly. But, you know, he never moved, you know, he never moved to, you know, like Omaha or, you know, a good right wing city or in Missoula, Montana or anything like that. Stayed right there in San Francisco because it's a wonderful place to live if you're as wealthy as he was.
If you can afford it.
Right, if you're as wealthy as he was. But he would refer to Gavin Newsom, Annie Twosom Newsom. That's what he called it, Annie Twosom Newsom. And I thought, oh, well, yeah, so he's marrying people. And of course, the Savage Wiener, Savage, is a notorious, because I haven't seen that he's dead yet, a notorious bigot and homophobe.
He's so, terribly offensive, Bob.
But, I mean, from the superficialities of things that Americans like in a politician, Newsom's the total package. You know, he's got the looks, he's got the panache, he dresses right, he's got the skill set. And honestly, Larry, the only thing I could say about whose money he takes and things like that, you always question the motives of who brings up what. Because sometimes it's not as clear cut as it seems.
Oh, I forgot to say, I'm on his mailing list too. I don't read the emails half the time, I delete them. But I get them all the time from Gavin Newsom. And I haven't got one from any other candidate. I don't know how he got my name. I don't remember what I did. Maybe I signed up for something I just shouldn't have signed up for.
Oh, by the way, let me go back here for a minute because I got a note from Arthur addressing Steve's question. Steve still with us? About impeachment earlier.
Yeah, still here.
Arthur says, GOP breaking point, impeachment. Hi, Brother Steve. Talking to what Steve said, there is a straw. We just don't know what it would look like, but I say there is a breaking point. It is hard to imagine what it would be. Like you, Bob, I also have an extremely toxic regard for the GOP, the party of treason. I think the GOP will cave for impeachment when Trump does something so bad that it will all but guarantee a political death sentence for the party as a whole. Even with all of that, they may just move to impeach and fight like crazy not to convict in the Senate. And yes, of course, some Democratic senators would vote to acquit so as not to put America through another constitutional crisis, or because they're afraid of the repercussions. I mean, because the American people want to look forward, not backwards. Thoughts and prayers, Bob. And I think that's a pretty solid analysis, and that's kind of what I was going for. As long as the Republicans do not see impeaching Trump as something that's going to be a problem for them, then they're not going to touch it. In the meantime, note coming from Kevin out in Colorado Springs. Kevin says, I'm having the prep for a colonoscopy on the night of the State of the Union. Goddess of irony never misses an opportunity to impress, now does she? It's also fitting that what comes from this prep and what the true State of the Union is are exactly the same thing. Shit.
Bob, was that Kevin Scott from...
That's Kevin in Colorado Springs, yeah.
Oh, it's the same.
Yeah, that's
same
Kevin.
Kevin.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was trying to help him years ago. I was trying to help him set up his computer so that he could be able to you know, I can't even recall what it was about, but he was never able to get it set up. Well, I don't know what I can't remember, but I remember talking with him. I hope he's doing okay.
He is. We heard from him for the first time a while back, but the irony of doing colonoscopy prep on the night of Trump's first State of the Union is, no, that the goddess of irony is with you, Kevin. She's with you in a big way. Hey, Steve from New York just jumped in. Let's check in. Hey, Steve.
Hey there. How are you?
Pretty good. How about you?
Working late. Can you hear me? Okay?
Oh yeah, yeah. I hear you great. So you're still on the clock.
Yeah. Well, or I'm still at the office. So yeah, I haven't been listening very much tonight. I haven't been listening very much over the last few days. I'm beginning to have serious Trump fatigue, and I think you and I talked about this outrage fatigue, and that and it really was very poignant to me. I was listening to Randy Rhodes today, and she was talking about, you know, basically a really nice timeline of everything that has gone down. And then it suddenly occurred to me, it's been less than between the time of the inauguration until Mueller was like a matter of months. And I have to be honest with you. I have a hard time realizing that this is only a year. And it's just, I just sometimes get to a point where I have to completely tune out, and which unfortunately the good people of the Horn and the Horn Nutraceuticals sometimes fall in that category, and I just have to kind of close out,
That's okay.
Zone out for a while.
Look, I understand. I got to be here. You know, I'm Odysseus lashed to the mast. Okay, I'm going to be here. Everybody else, you know, on his ship, everybody else got to stick beeswax in their ears. I was about to say beer wax in their ears. But they got to stick beeswax in their ears and didn't have to hear the siren song. I'm lashed to the mast with no beeswax. And I understand it, and you know, that's why I make the joke about me being a little ray of fucking sunshine, because I realize that the litany of disaster and the litany of outrage can be exhausting. And that's why, you know, that like I've said before, that's why Horn Nutraceuticals exists. That's why this day in Horn history exists, and all the other clowny little things that go on around here, because as Mary Poppins famously sang, a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down.
Okay, fair enough. I agree.
It's your shtick, Bob.
Well, I mean, it hasn't always been there, but it, you know, things to just make life a little easier, like the guy who literally said, "Jesus, take the wheel" in Tennessee a few couple of days ago. And rolled his car 5 times.
Wow.
Yeah. And he was babbling some serious bullshit when they got to him. And, of course, they found a hat, you know, 6/10 of a gram of cocaine and a bag of weed and a little of this and a little of that, guns. And, of course, he didn't have a driver's license. Presumably Jesus did, but Jesus fled the scene.
Yeah, I was going to ask that if Jesus had the driver's license, you know?
Well, I think somebody let Jesus take the wheel today. Oh, there was a wreck on I-5 that slowed everybody down, right here in town.
Well, you know,
Well,
you know, this is a twist. This is a twist. So usually it's the devil made me do it. Is this now Jesus made me do it?
Yeah, he's more reliable.
Seems that way. And he seems to have a sense of humor.
I was just going to say to Steve that just a little less than 2 years ago when Trump announced he was going to run and there was 16 other Republicans running, it was like bad performance art. And then it was like, do people really believe him? And there was no chance. And then the thing that's not supposed to happen happened again. And the threshold has been changed. You know, our normal expectations are not working anymore. And it really challenges us to be resilient and adjust to how bipolar this administration is. And the whole nation that has a little bit of a soul and a little bit of empathy is fighting some pretty serious stuff because it is disturbing.
Yeah.
At least you don't have to worry about Oprah.
Yeah, we won't have Oprah Winfrey to kick around anymore.
Right.
Well, they'll find some other person of color to, you know, make into, you know, the voodoo doll. It's always worked, and obviously, you know, there's a strong white nationalist core to the Republican Party, so, you know, there's going to be racism as long as they can spell it.
Well, Cory Booker is running, I believe.
Right, and he's he's already...
For what?
No, I mean, nobody's announced anything, but it's presumed that Cory Booker will probably take a run at the presidential nomination on the Democratic side.
God, please.
Well,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, no, I was just going to point out that the Republicans already have him in their sights because you've got this Gavin McInnes character out there calling him a Sambo.
Yeah.
And I'll say something. I'm sorry, Bob, go ahead.
No, I was going to say go ahead, Steve.
No. And then couple this with the utter ineptitude of the Democrats to craft a message to, you know, I think I kind of empathized with Schumer a little bit, but I just feel like the Democrats had it was like having a aluminum bat with a cantaloupe being underhanded to them, and they swung and missed with this latest, you know, latest thing. I will give Nancy Pelosi credit. I actually had seen a press conference she gave on the Saturday after the government shut down. And this should have been the meme. I don't know why it wasn't, where she basically said, look, this, even if the Dreamers had never, if that were not an issue, this is beyond that. This is the fact that we don't have an infrastructure bill. This is the fact that we don't have the budgets of every single department. No, there is no budget for any department, and the Republicans have controlled the whole thing. And once again, the Democrats allowed the Republicans, and just as Bob said, by the way, allowed the Republicans to frame this as you want to hold out for a bunch of illegal immigrants over real Americans, and they
the children.
I just have to tell you, I wonder, I think to myself, am I the dumb one here? Why does it seem so obvious to me? I mean, I'm not, you know, maybe it's just, Steve, you're just on the outside. You don't understand politics. You just don't understand. And then I wonder if that's what it is when you're in that, and you know this too, Bob, when you're in that Washington bubble for so long, you begin to believe your own shit. And the public or outside the beltway be damned. And
well, there's absolutely truth to that, Steve. The other part of that though is that there is a different reality in D.C. There's how shit happens in a very stylized, Byzantine, in the truest sense of the word, manner. How badly hung over the chairman is this morning may determine the fate of 300,000 fucking people. And that is absolutely divorced from what happens, as they say, outside the beltway.
Right.
And the first. Go ahead.
That's the wrong 0.1%. That's not the 0.1% they're looking out for.
Okay. Meanwhile, there's a little pushback coming, and I don't think it's in any kind of a hostile way, Steve. Earther says the Republicans do not have a better messaging capability than the Democrats. Their billionaire donors have a better capacity and millions of dollars poured in over decades. And I think there's a ton of truth in that, too. And I don't want to get up on this horse this late in the program, but our side is not particularly supportive of the attempt of any attempt to control or shape or nuance the message. The old adage of why would I buy the cow when I'm getting the milk for free applies. So that, you know, and there's a sort of snootiness about, listen to those little weirdos and their right wing hate radio. Well, we certainly don't want to be doing anything like that. Can't we throw a cocktail party with someone famous and take pictures for $10,000 a piece? I mean, do you disagree, Steve?
You cut out there for a second, so I wasn't quite sure what you said. I'm sorry about that.
Oh no, that's okay. No,
that's been happening off and on all night, Steve.
Oh, somebody, okay. Would have been nice if somebody had told me. But no, just the idea that we're not our side. It's not just that we're bad at it; it's that we're not interested in it.
Oh, so you and I have talked about this. I mean, at what point? I mean, look at. You know, I know I've said it a million times that Obama, you know, I would give anything to have Obama back other than this piece of horse dung. But the fact of the matter is this, is that Obama, and for that matter, the Democrats in general over the past 25 to 30 years have been awful, horrible at party building. I never will forget the statistic I'd seen. I think it was in the 2010 or 2014 midterm where the Democrats lost in one election, lost a net of around 690 seats nationwide of state and local races. And they've lost 1,000 seats of state and local races nationwide in the last like 10 years. And I look at that and I think to myself, at what point do the people in, and it's the same people in charge who still run the thing, at what point do the rank and file say, listen, Tom Perez, you're not just part of the problem, you are the problem. Listen, Donna Brazile, and listen, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, at all these people who are there and continue to be there, and Charles Schumer, et cetera, et cetera. You are the problem. And I think this really harkens back to the conversation that Bob, Eric, Bjorn, and I had while I was walking on the bridge over the Rideau Canal or the Rideau River in Ottawa a year ago this past Christmas, is that there's a lot more money to be made in losing than there is in winning. And that's until that stops, it's not going to change. And we're just... You know, us soiled masses down here are just collateral damage in their finance, in their game of high finance. Well, I sound like a little ray of sunshine too.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. No, actually, if I may be so bold, you sound tired, Steve. And if you're still at work at this hour, you probably damned well are.
Yeah. But I'm just, you know, it's just, I just find this stuff to be so simple. It's right there for everyone to see. And I can't tell you how many times I've looked at this and went, am I the dumb one?
Well, am I the crazy one?
If
you were wealthy enough, you could walk up and kick a few people in the ass and they'd thank you for it. And you'd explain it to them. I mean, look at Tom Steyer, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know he's horribly, horribly ideologically impure. But he's got a shitload of money, and he's marched into the process, and he's trying to get people to get behind the idea of impeaching Donald Trump. And if you could sit down with him, and with little time left and remaining in the conversation, I simply want to point out what a manifest injustice
the people who so thoroughly fucked up Air America did to the overall cause of a progressive or liberal media landscape slash infrastructure, whatever you want to call it. They absolutely poisoned the well, and it's been a series of well poisonings. People going in who had no idea how this kind of stuff worked, and ruining it, and then making it possible for any potential funders to say, well, you know, that's been tried and it didn't work. Well, it was run by a bunch of fucking grifters. And ta-da, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I would pay anything for a nice echo chamber where we could get our message. I was thinking, I again listened to Randy Rhodes, and she was playing all of the different, you know, all of the different radio programs and TV programs and Fox and Rush Hemorrhoid and all these people. And what did I hear? Secret society, secret society, secret society, secret society, secret society, secret society. And that's how it happens.
Well, you know something, the before we go, Bob, and I know it's 6 o'clock, what appears to have happened is that the Air America crowd is now the only left that's out there, and they're now doing Progressive Voices and also free speech television. And I don't hear anybody who's really left, like on KPFA or WBAI. Those people aren't really, you know, they haven't really gotten onto whatever we would call liberal radio. So, okay.
Well, I mean, I love the gang over at Progressive Voices. I can't get on there to save my soul. Okay? I can't. 3 hours a night, 5 nights a week for more than 12 years, and I guess I'm just still a Johnny come lately, or maybe the program sucks. But as far as I can tell, it doesn't, not based on the responses that I get.
You got a great program, Bob, that's for sure.
But, you know, by the same token, we survive here, and we do, and it ain't easy, but we survive, and I'm too stubborn to quit.
I've been listening to you for 9 years now, Bob.
Exactly, Sparky. And, you know, and I said back in 2004, one of my goals is to be here when Air America's done. And we've been
mission
here,
accomplished.
Yeah, but by you know, years and years and years and years. And you what? But oh well, I'm not going to go there. I'm just simply not going to go there. We'll talk about this a little in greater depth on another Friday. In the meantime,
I've been on since the terrestrial days, Bob. I mean, you don't suck, brother. Don't say that.
Well, thank you. I mean, you know, thank you. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, whom Steve says doesn't suck. The fraternity of several.
Say goodnight, Bob.
I will in a minute, but I got a good line here. Several Steves agree Bob doesn't suck. Nine out of ten Steves agree. Yeah.
There you go.
Kid tested, Steve approved. Okay, so let's get out of here. It's been a wonderful week, everybody. Thanks so much for making this our first fundraising free night for the remainder of January. Thanks to everybody who subscribes. Thanks to everybody who kicks in along the way through the months to keep the program going. Thank you to all of you who share your precious, finite time engaged in this little running conversation. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you to Midweek Utility Pinch Hit chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgia Stan. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa there with HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody.